Thank you for joining us and for introducing, and thank you all the participants for coming in to join us. We have, I think, 75 people on this call or more, so that's really quite amazing. So thank you for your interest in Sefer Daniel and in studying Tanakh in general. I think that Tanakh is the resurgence of the study of Tanakh in the modern era is part of the story of the State of Israel and its contribution and its center of gravity and a fulfillment in the highest form of the phrase from Yeshayahu, Ki Mitzion Tetze Torah Dvar Hashem Yerushalayim, the Torah that is not only emanating from Yerushalayim, from Israel, in terms of its location, but also in terms of its concept and centrality and the resurgence of a kind of learning that we now are able to enjoy. And I am very grateful to my teachers, especially my Tanakh teachers. I learned most of what I understand and approach to Tanakh from Rav Medan, who is today the Rosh Yeshiva Yeshivat Har Etzion, and I'm very grateful to him over the years and to the Yeshiva for their guidance and direction. And with no further ado, we're going to jump right in. So I am going to mute everybody for the sake of the class. Let's see if I remember how to do that. Mute all. Okay, that should mute everybody. But I've left the option to unmute. So feel free to chime in if you have a question or a comment or an observation. And if you have a camera and you are able to turn it on, I will be happy to see your face. If not, please forgive me. I'm not going to read all of the 85 or so subtitle names, but please feel free. We are studying Sefer Daniel, and as I said, the six-week course is really just a taste. It's the beginning, first chapter or two, and then assuming that there is interest and it is successful, we can continue. Sefer Daniel as a whole is a extensive sefer with many pieces to it, and a fundamental book in Tanakh. For reasons that are linguistic primarily, meaning that a good half of the sefer is written in Aramaic, and the other half is very esoteric and symbolic, it is really a sefer that has been neglected in terms of its ongoing course of study. And so I remember when I was in high school, uniquely so, in Rabbi Rischen's high school when it was still in Riverdale, we studied Tanakh, and we had a course in Sefer Daniel. And I remember learning Sefer Daniel in high school. I was fascinated by it. And many years later, we had a course with Rav Medan, Sefer Daniel, and equally fascinated by it. And so I want to share that intrigue with you, and this is going to be a journey together into the world of the first steps we took into the Babylonian exile experience after the Churban. It's a fascinating book. In many ways, it's very different from the rest of the story of Tanakh in the sense that we know much of what happened to the Jews in Bavel from the book of Yechezkel, which is part of Nevi'im. And Yechezkel leads the Jewish community. He's the prophet who leads them through that experience and eventually helps them reorient themselves and come back under the guidance of Ezra and Nehemiah. And so we have the books of Ezra and Nehemiah and Chronicles and Divrei Hayamim that tell the story of our return from the Babylonian exile. But Daniel is the very early stages of our first steps into that world. More importantly, it's not the world of the Navi speaking to Israel. It's the world of a handful, it's the story, at least in its early first half of the book, the story of a handful of Jews come to Bavel as children and how they struggle with what it means to be a Jewish child in the exile, now involved in the Babylonian world, and the challenges that they faced culturally and religiously, and the prophecies that Daniel experiences, and or the dreams that Nebuchadnezzar experiences, and the relationship with the kings of Babel at the time, Nebuchadnezzar and the Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar, and the Persian experience, all of the concepts that we are familiar with, but Daniel tells that story. Daniel is also important for another reason, which is not so known, and that is that there are many pieces in the book of Daniel that are prophecies, or like prophecies, dreams or visions about the future, and that have often been interpreted to reflect a kind of when is the Mashiach going to come kind of prophecy. Daniel has numbers, and he has dates, and he has calculations, and complex ones, and esoteric ones. And is he talking about the time of Yemot HaMashiach, or is he talking about something else? That's the mystery. And Mirtz Hashem, if the time permits over the course of the extended version of this course, we will get to some of those prophecies, and we will explore them in detail. So that's my introduction. I'm going to get right into it. To do so for this course, I'm going to be sharing my screen with you because almost everything I'm going to do is going to be working off the text and the source pages or the Mefarshim. The link to the source pages is in the chat. If you just joined us, I will actually, I don't know if I can do this, but we're going to try, post the actual source page here. Can I do that? No, I can't. But you should be able to, let's see if I can do this again. Okay, I just reposted it in case you are just joining us, so you can download the sources, but I'm going to share them on the screen as well. So we're going to jump right in. Share screen, and we should be there. Okay, does everybody see the screen?
Yes.
Okay, great. Daniel Perek Aleph. Bishnat Shalosh Lemalchut Yehoyakim, third year of the reign of Yehoyakim. I'm just going to try to do something. Okay. All right, there we go.
We're not seeing the source sheet, if that's what you think we're seeing.
No, your source page. Okay. The source page is over here. We'll get to it right now.
Okay. I just want to make sure that we're all seeing the same thing.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate that. It's a bunch of tabs at the top, and I'm kind of prepared to jump from one to the other. But this is what we're going to work with. It's a wonderful website called alhatorah.org, and it's almost like an online Mikraot Gedolot. In fact, that's what it's called. And it allows me to pull up not only the text with the translation, but also commentaries, Mikraot Gedolot style commentaries. So it really is a perfect tool for our purposes. And we're going to start right from the beginning. I'm going to just deal with the introduction. Bishnat Shalosh Lemachut Yehoyakim, Melech Yehuda, the third year of the reign of Yehoyakim, king of Yehuda, of Judah. Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babel, came to Yerushalayim and laid siege to it. This is before the destruction of the temple. This is the story of the exile that led to an early exile, even before the Churban itself. And we'll talk about the history in a second. Vayiten Hashem biyadot Yehoyakim melech Yehuda. Remember, at that point in time, the destruction of the, or the role of Nebuchadnezzar, or the authority for Nebuchadnezzar to come and to conquer Israel was, from the perspective of the Nevi'im, was granted by God. And so Hashem gave Yehoyakim over to the king of, to Nebuchadnezzar. Umiktzat klei beit elokim, together with some of the vessels of the temple. Those vessels of the temple will play a very important role much later in the book. But some of the vessels, it doesn't say which kind of vessels or what they were made out of, but they also go. V'yivim eretz Shinar Beit Elohav. And he carried them off to the land of Shinar, which is Babel, to their temples. V'takilim yivi Beit Otzar Elohav. And he took the vessels and brought them into their treasure houses. That's the introduction, places us into the context of the early exile into Babel, led by Nebuchadnezzar when he exiles the king Jehoiakim, king of Judah, in the third year of his reign, Bishnat Shalosh Lamalchut. The rest of the parak we'll deal with Bezrat Hashem next week or subsequently, deals with what happens to them once they reach Babel. For today, I can't really enter into the book itself without first addressing the historical context that is introduced to us in the opening two verses. And if I just summarize, what does it say? It says, I have a king by the name of Jehoiakim, who has the third year of his reign, and Nebuchadnezzar comes to Yerushalayim. It doesn't destroy Yerushalayim, and he does not yet destroy the temple. That will come 11 years later. This is, or a number of years later. This is just an initial exile of Jehoiakim and some of the kelim of the Beit HaMikdash as a kind of a statement of authority. I'm taking the king to exile. And places in his stead another king. Right? He appoints the next king of Israel. The problem we have with these verses is that besides the fact, it tells a story. This story should theoretically be able to be corroborated by other books of Tanakh. We have the story of the exiles of the kings of Judah and the end of the first temple period, or the end of the independence of the kings of Israel at that time. And the problem, of course, will be that there is a discrepancy, a glaring discrepancy between what is described here and what is described in the remainder of the other books of Tanakh. So based on what I have here, if I were to say, okay, so what do we have? What we're seeing is that third year of Jehoiakim's reign, Nebuchadnezzar is in Yerushalayim. If anybody has ever studied parts of the Book of Kings or the end of the Book of Kings or the Book of Chronicles, you would be able to right away pick up the fact that this is almost impossible. Or Yirmiyahu. This statement is virtually impossible to be true. At least on face value. Why? Because, let's jump in here. Okay, this is the source page that you have. So this is the verse I just read. Third year of the reign of Jehoiakim. Jehoiakim, based on what I've read in these verses, what happened to Jehoiakim in this third year of his reign? He goes into exile, which means that, I'm assuming Jehoiakim is now sitting in Babel, and whoever came after Jehoiakim, in this case Jehoiachin, and then and I'll show you the royal family in a moment, and the rest of the story. Except that Jehoiakim doesn't reign for 3 years. Jehoiakim reigns for 11 years. So it says in both Divrei Hayamim and in Malachim. Ben 25 shana Jehoiakim b'mocho. He comes to the throne at the age of 25. Shana malach b'Yerushalayim. And he reigned for 11 years in Yerushalayim. And then, Allah alav Nebuchadnezzar melech bavel, v'yasreyu bin chushtayim lo licho bavel. Then Nebuchadnezzar comes to him and puts him in chains and carries him to Babel. Umiklei Beit Hashem evi Nebuchadnezzar leBavel, and as we described here in Daniel, takes of the kelim of the vessels of the Beit HaMikdash into that exile as well, Beitnem Behechalo, and placed them in his palace or in his treasury. Which means that I have the exact same event described in these two places, in Divrei Hayamim and in Daniel, and yet in Daniel, it's described as having taken place in the third year of his reign, and in Divrei Hayamim, it's taking place in his 11th year, because that's how his reign ends. He reigned for 11 years, and at the end of it, Nebuchadnezzar comes to Yerushalayim, or his representatives, to carry Jehoiakim in fetters to Babel. Well, is it the third year, or is it his 11th year? That is a question. That in itself is a contradiction. It's even further a contradiction when you take a look at the verse in Yirmiyahu, which gives us a little bit of the time frame involved, and we're going to recreate that time frame momentarily. this nevuah, whatever the nevuah is, I'm not interested in the text of chapter 25, just this one verse. Bashana ha-revi'it lo Yehoyakim, the fourth year of Yehoyakim, so now I have a third year, I have the 11th year, and I have an event that took place in the third year. In the fourth year. What happened in the fourth year of Yehoyakim, Ben Yoshiyahu? Hi ha-shana ha-rishonit le-Nebuchadnezzar melech Bavel. Year one of Nebuchadnezzar. Year one of Nebuchadnezzar is year four of Yehoyakim, which means Yehoyakim is sitting on the throne for 4 years before Nebuchadnezzar is even in the story. Well, so how could Nebuchadnezzar come to Yerushalayim in year three of Yehoyakim and exile him? And how could that event be described as having taken place in year 11? So I have a three-way conflict between these three sources. And just to make life more interesting, I'll add another element of the conflict. We have the story of the end of the kings of Judah recorded in the Sefer Malachim. We have the story of the end of the kings recorded in Sefer Divrei Hayamim in Chronicles and in the Book of Kings. And nowhere in either of those two books does it tell us that Yehoyakim went into exile. In fact, we know there are three, if you include the story of the exile of the northern tribes. For now, I'm not talking about the northern tribes. The northern kingdom of Israel has disappeared 75 years or 100 years earlier. We are talking about the kingdom of Judah, and the kingdom of Judah, we know from the Book of Kings and the Book of Chronicles, has two exiles. What is referred to as the Galut of Yehoyachin, the exile, the initial stage of exile of Yehoyachin, followed by the destruction of the temple under the leadership of, at the time that Tzidkiyahu was the king. And we have no reference anywhere to an exile of Yehoyakim from those books. So now I have just a complete confusion in the story. A book of Daniel opens with Yehoyakim being exiled in year three, that conflicts with the chronology of Yehoyakim in the Book of Kings and Chronicles. It conflicts with the chronology of Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel from the Book of Yirmiyahu, and conflicts with the message of both Malachim and Divrayim, that we don't have such an exile recorded. So now we're just in a chant of confusion. So to begin to sort this out, and we're not the first ones to discover this problem. It's addressed in all the Mefarshim, and there is a solution to it. But the solution is, before we get to the solution, where I want to unpack the history for a moment, so we are all on the same page as to what exactly happened, and that will give us the keys to understand the solution. And it will also give us the key to understanding why this piece of the story, this historical background, is important. Because on the face of it, why do I need to know all of this about year 3, year 11, etc.? I just start with the story. The story is about Daniel. The story is about his friends who are in Bavel. And in fact, this reference to Yehoyakim is never repeated in the rest of the text. Yehoyakim doesn't play part of the story, doesn't play part of the role of the story. It's just there in the beginning, in the opening two sentences. Why is this important? So what I'd like to do is kind of walk you through a quick reconstruction of the end of the period of Malchut Yehuda. Who were the kings? When did they live? How long they reigned for? What was going on in that world? Kind of do this quickly. It's recorded in two places. The short version of it is in the Book of Chronicles. The longer version of it is in the Book of Kings. We're going to kind of just glance through it, but first let me introduce you to the last family of the reigning seed of King David. So the story starts with Yoshiyahu. Yoshiyahu, if you know the story of Sefer Malachim, Yoshiyahu was the last, I would call the last great king that we had. Yoshiyahu is an extraordinary individual who goes through an attempt to revive Jewish life in all of its facets after the terrible time of idolatry of Manasseh, and Amnon and his son Amnon, and he just builds and destroys idolatry and creates a sense of unity in the, amongst the people, and he restores the temple. There's a very famous story where he has his public reading of the Torah in the temple and the celebration of Pesach. And unfortunately, towards the end, he ends up in a conflict with the king of Egypt, where the king of Egypt wants to kind of march through the land of Israel on his way to fight against the rising power in the north of Nebuchadnezzar. Yoshiyahu tries to stop Paro Necho from walking through his land, and ends up in a battle with Paro, with Egypt, in which he is killed. And that's sort of, and that's where the story begins. So we're going to jump into the book of Kings. Actually, I was introducing you to the royal family. Yoshiyahu has three sons, Yoachaz, Yoyakim, and Sidkiah. Now, those are the changed names. The original names are Eliakim and the Mataniah and Yoachaz. We'll talk about why the names are changed in a few minutes. But these are the three kings, or these are the three sons of Yoshiyahu. There's another one, Yechoniah, or also known as Yehoyachin. He is a grandson of Yoshiyahu. These are the last kings of Israel. In order, Yoshiyahu, then Yehoahaz, then Yehoyakim, then Yehoyachin, and then Tzidkiyahu, his uncle. Of the three sons of Yoshiyahu, Yehoyakim is the oldest, which is evident from the ages. Yehoahaz comes to the throne at the age of 23, Yehoyakim comes to the throne at the age of 25, and they're 3 months, and they reign 3 months apart. Which means in the same year, Yehoyakim is 2 years older than Yehoahaz. It's relevant just to understand the story, what happened. So let's jump into the text for a second, and what happened after the death of Yoshiyahu. The death of Yoshiyahu was the last blow, if you will. From here, we are 22 years before the destruction of the temple and the exiles. The last great hope for Israel to regain its independence and its authority and its power was Yoshiyahu. When Yoshiyahu was killed in battle, it basically spelled the end of the kingdom of Israel. If Yoshiyahu, with all of his righteousness and all of his loyalty to the Nevi'im and all of his spiritual revival and tshuva and etc., was unable to stem that process and turn the story around, then the likelihood is that nobody else would either, and so we are on a one-way trajectory to the destruction of the temple. Literally, you can see from the numbers, 22 years later. That's unfortunately the tragedy of it. So let's go into the book of Kings. This is all a description of Yoshiyahu and his Korban Pesach and his spiritual reformation and revolution and revival, and he dies in battle in Megiddo. In Pasuk Lamed, Menasim Shalosh Shana Yoachaz B'Mocho. Actually, I'm going to go one pasuk back. Vayir Kivu Avadav Mit Mimgido. His servants took the body of Yeshiyahu from Megiddo. They brought him to Yerushalayim. Vayikberu B'Kvurato, and they buried him there in Yerushalayim. Vayikach Am Haaretz Et Yoachaz Ben Yeshiyahu Vayimshichu Oto Vayimlichu Oto Tachat Aviv. The people, the leadership of the people, Am Haaretz, which is a fascinating phrase. In modern Hebrew, an Am Haaretz is an ignorant, is somebody who is ignorant. In biblical Hebrew, the Am Haaretz are the nobility of the land. I have no idea how that shift takes place, but it does. That's the power of language, that a kind of words change their meaning. But nonetheless, the Am Haaretz here means the leadership of the people. They appoint Yehoahaz. Whoops, sorry about that. They appoint Yehoahaz ben Yoshiyahu as Melech. That is significant because they bypass the older brother. They bypass Yehoyakim or Eliakim, and they go to the second brother and appoint him as king. The third brother is too young to even be a possibility. And Yehoahaz is sort of perceived as somebody who would follow his father's footsteps, who would follow that path that Yoshiyahu set. Unfortunately, it doesn't happen. And in the meantime, Paro comes back into the picture. I'm going to skip a little bit here. Vayasreu Paro Necho Berivla Be'eretz Chamat Mimloch B'Yerushalayim. Paro Necho comes and takes Yoachaz into exile to Egypt. Vayten Onesh Ala Aretz Me'aki Kakesef, and he taxes or he fines the people of Israel, of Judah, a fine for having interfered and intervened, and he captures the king Yoachaz. Vayamlech Paro Necho et Eliakim ben Yoshiyahu tachat Yoshiyahu, and Paro Necho, Paro of Egypt, makes Eliakim, son of Yoshiyahu, king instead of Yoshiyahu, meaning instead of Yoachaz. Vayasev et Shmo Yoyakim, and the king of Egypt, Paro, changes his name to Yoyakim. And the king of Egypt took Yehoahaz to exile in Egypt, and there he died. In other words, just to put in perspective what's going on, there's a power vacuum in the aftermath of Yoshiyahu, and into that power vacuum, there's also a struggle between the two brothers. The older brother, Yoyakim, and the younger brother, Yehoahaz. The people choose Yehoahaz. Unclear, it doesn't say what happened with Yehoiakim. The conjecture or the theory is that Yehoiakim then ran to Egypt and allied himself with Paro and said, "You put me back on the throne, I will be loyal to you." And so Paro comes marching back to Yerushalayim, takes the people's choice, Yoachaz, takes him to exile to Egypt where he will die, and, or he's killed, it's unclear, and in his stead places Eliakim, the older brother, on the throne, and changes his name. There's much to be said about the change of names. Change of name is always, in Tanakh, certainly amongst the kings, is a symbol of loyalty. Your master changes your name is a symbol that you, as the disciple, are now loyal to the master. Moshe changes Hosea's name to Yehoshua as a symbol that Yehoshua is the disciple and the student of Moshe. Abraham's name, Avram and Sarah's name are changed to Brit Milah as a symbol of their loyalty to God. It's part of this concept of name changing. It's a reflection of loyalty. And so, forced into that service role, Eliakim's name is changed to Yehoiakim because he's placed on the throne by Paro. And that's Egypt's way of playing the power struggle, because remember, Paro, Egypt is in a conflict with the rising power in the north of Nebuchadnezzar. So if he can pull the strings of the new vassal state of Israel and place on the throne somebody whose loyalty is now solely to Egypt, because Egypt put him on the throne, he gains the upper hand against Bavel as well. And that's the beginning of the reign of Yehoiakim. He comes to the throne at the age of 25, and he reigns for 11 years. That now moves to us to the next part of the story. And this is the verse that we saw earlier in chapter 24. B'yamav alad Nebuchadnezzar, melech Bavel. Nebuchadnezzar comes to Yerushalayim, and he, if you remember from the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, Nebuchadnezzar comes to power in year 4 of Yehoiakim. Keep that in mind. There's a 4-year shift, because for 4 years now, Yehoiakim is on the throne and his loyalty is to Egypt. And then Nebuchadnezzar is in a conflict with, or Bavel is in a conflict with Egypt. Let me put this in perspective for you. I'm going to jump down here for a second. This is the verse in Yirmiyahu. Sorry for jumping around on the pages, but it'll just be easier to see it in sequence. This is that verse from Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu tells the story of the rise of Nebuchadnezzar in year 4 of Yehoiakim. Because it takes 4 years for Bavel to overpower Egypt in this power struggle. And so that battle, that ultimately is the decisive battle between Nebuchadnezzar And Paro Melech Mitzrayim, or Paro Necho, is described in Perek Memvav of Yirmiyahu. The Mitzrayim, it's a prophecy to Yirmiyahu concerning Egypt. Al-Chel Paro Necho, about the army of Paro Necho, king of Egypt, Asherayal Nahar Prat, Bekar Kamish, who fought against Bavel in a battle known as the Battle of Karkamish, near the Euphrates River, Asherikah Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel, conquered by Nebuchadnezzar, king of Bavel, Bishnah HaRivi'it LeYoyakim, in Yoyakim's fourth year. A year later, Yirmiyahu describes a moment of great challenge in Yerushalayim in the fifth year of Yehoyakim, in which Yirmiyahu goes into an extensive fast of tefillah and fasting, etc. And the Mefarshim suggest that that's the first attempt, or the first steps Nebuchadnezzar takes to assert his authority over Yerushalayim. And Yehoyakim is now in the middle of this power play between the conquered of power of Egypt, where his loyalty was to Egypt, because Egypt put him on the throne, and now the new power on the block, namely Nebuchadnezzar. And that's where we come back to our story in Sefer Melachim. Biyamav, in the days of Yehoyakim, Ala Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel, Nebuchadnezzar comes to Yerushalayim, Vahino Yoyakim Eved Shaloshanim. And for 3 years, Yoyakim plays the role of a good boy. Eved, he was a servant to whom? To the king of Bavel. But his loyalty was always to the power that put him on the throne. And the power that put him on the throne was the king of Egypt. And so after 3 years, Vayashav Vayimrod Bo, Yoyakim began a rebellion against Nebuchadnezzar. Against the advice of the prophets, and this is much more extensively described in Sefer Yirmiyahu, Yirmiyahu advised absolutely fire and brimstone against rebelling against Bavel. Yirmiyahu's message to Yehoyakim was, Nebuchadnezzar is the power on the block because God wanted it that way. And therefore, you need to be loyal to, you need to subject yourselves to the Lord and remain loyal to the new authority, namely Nebuchadnezzar, king of Bavel. Yoyakim's loyalty is to Egypt. He refuses to listen to Yirmiyahu, and he starts a rebellion. And that rebellion doesn't go very well. Vayishlach Hashem bot k'dudei kazdim et k'dudei aram et k'dudei moav et k'dudei b'nei amon vayishalchem b'yehuda la'avido. God sent against him all kinds of armies of Chaldeans and Arameans and Moabites and Ammonites, etc. to destroy Judah. K'dvar Hashem Hashem diber b'yad avadav ha'nevi'im, like God said to in the names of the and through the Nevi'im, which is a reference to Yirmiyahu. All right. Vayishkav Yehoyakim im avotav. Yehoyakim dies after 11 years. We'll talk about that towards the end of the shiur today. And Vayimloch Yehoyakim bino tachtav. And Nebuchadnezzar places on the throne Yehoyakim, the son of Yehoyakim. And that ends Egypt's position in the land of Israel. V'lohosif ot melech Mitzrayim letzet mi'arzo. Egypt never raised their head again in this context. Ki lekach melech Bavel minacha Mitzrayim ad Nahar Prat, because the king of Bavel had taken everything that belonged to Egypt from Nahar Prat all the way down to Nacha Mitzrayim. And the shift to Yehoyachin, he's 18 years when he assumes the throne. Ben Shmanas v'shana Yehoyachin v'mocho. But he only reigns for 3 months. U'shlosha chodashim malach b'Yerushalayim. 3 months. What happened in after 3 months? I think it actually is described better in Divrei Hayamim.
Rabbi, can I ask a question about Yirmiyahu?
Yes, in 1 second. Let me just finish the thought. Ben Shmoneh Shanim Yoyachin B'mocho, 8, he's 18 years old when he comes to the throne. Some discussion about why it says 8. Ushlosha chodeshim, and he reigns for 3 months and 10 days. Ulutshuvat Hashana, remember, Nebuchadnezzar is the one who put him on the throne. Ulutshuvat Hashana, a year later, or within that year, 3 months later, Shalach HaMelech Nebuchadnezzar v'yevi'ehu bavela, Nebuchadnezzar sent messengers to bring Yehoyachin, who he had just put on the throne, to Bavel, together with Klei Chemdat Bet Hashem, together with all of the vessels, the godly vessels of the temple, and they place on the throne in his stead, Vayamlechet Tzidkiyahu Achiv al Yehuda v'Yushalayim, and in his stead they place Tzidkiyahu, brother of Yehoyakim, as king, and that is described here in Malachim as well. Vayetzar Yehoyachin, Melech Yehuda, Melech Bavel, Hu v'Imo v'Avadav, Yehoyachin, and all of his family get taken by the king of Bavel in the 8th year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar. Vayetzar Misham et kol otzvot bet Hashem, they take all of the treasures of the temple, and they exile it all to Bavel. V'iglat kol Yerushalayim, he exiled together with Yehoyachin, the leadership of Yerushalayim, et kol asarim, et kol gibrei hachayil, the men, the warriors, the soldiers, 10,000 people go into exile together with Yehoyachin, hecharash v'yamazger, together with the artisans and the craftsmen, and there was nobody left in Yerushalayim except the poor, v'lo nishar zulat dalat amar, it's the poorest of the people. Vayagel et Yehoyachin Bavel, and he exiles Yehoyachin to Bavel together with the entire royal family. So it's unclear why King of Bavel appoints Yehoyachin and 3 months later takes him into exile. We'll talk about that a little bit, but that is the story. And so in his place, he places on the throne King of Bavel, Vayamlech, Melech Bavel, et Matanya Dodo. Matanya is his uncle, and he changes his name, King of Bavel changes his name to Tzidkiyahu, and from there we're 11 years before the destruction of the temple. Yes, so you had a question about the Yirmiyahu.
Yeah, I was wondering that he was only there for a few months, and then they appoint Nebuchadnezzar appoints another different king. But basically, Yoshiao was the good king. He listened to the Navi, but the rest of the kings did not listen to Yirmiyahu. So I would think that'd be part of the punishments, that the Jews didn't listen to the Navi.
No question, but remember, the Navi is reacting to the idolatrous culture of the people, and the people's idolatry is driven by their desire to kind of align themselves with the powers of the moment, which are either Bavel or Mitzrayim. So it's a complex series of complex variables, but yes, part of it is that they're not listening to the Navi, kind of to add insult to injury. Okay. So let me come back to this summary for a second, because now that I've shared with you the details, it kind of easier to understand the significance of this chart. It's a basic chart of the last four kings of Israel and their family lineage, and who put them on the throne. And that's really the key part of the story, is that we are no longer dealing with a kind of independent kingdom of Israel. We are dealing with Israel now transformed into a kind of vassal state of Bavel or Egypt. We've lost really a sense of independence because there is a king in Israel, but the king is appointed and name changed, demonstrating authority and loyalty to a foreign power. And that, I mean, imagine for a moment, right? Chas v'shalom, lahavdil elef alfei avdolos, if the Prime Minister of Israel was appointed by a foreign power. Imagine what message that would be conveyed to the people. So put yourself back into the world of the children of Yoshiao, the last great independent king of Israel. And who's appointing the kings? The king of Egypt is appointing the king. The king of Bavel is appointing the king. It doesn't matter who's on the throne. Whoever is on the throne has a loyalty to whoever put him on the throne. So if the people put you on the throne, your loyalty is to the people. We call that democracy. If another foreign power puts you on the throne, then your loyalty is to them. And we call that a vassal state. So all independence has been lost the moment Yoshio, or the moment Yehoahaz, three months in, is taken off the throne. Egypt, Parnacho, places Yehoiakim on the throne, expecting Yehoiakim to be his kind of foil to Bavo. 4 years later, Bavo rises to power, conquers Egypt, and forces Yehoiakim to change his loyalty. And so what is described is, for 3 years, Nebuchadnezzar serves Bavo. Sorry, Yehoiakim serves Bavo. And then he turns against him and tries to rebel against him. So he was Ebed Shaloshanim, and then he rebels. That rebellion is put down in year 11. Nebuchadnezzar takes Yehoiakim into exile, or has him killed, whatever the story is, we'll see in a moment, and then places Yehoiachin on the throne. 3 months later, he comes back to take Yehoiachin off the throne and places Tzidkiyahu on the throne instead. And that's the turmoil of the end of the kings of Israel. And into that turmoil, we have the beginning of the description in Sefer Daniel. In the third year of Yehoiakim, Yehoiakim goes into exile together with the Kelim of the Beit HaMikdash. And the Mefarshim raised the obvious question. We have an exile of Yehoiachin. We have an exile of Tzidkiyahu. We don't have any exile of Yehoiakim. Nor do we have Nebuchadnezzar in Yerushalayim in his third year. Nebuchadnezzar doesn't even come to power until he conquers Egypt in Yehoiakim's fourth year. And that's why the Mefarshim all begin the story. And this is, I'll show it to you in the source pages. I'm giving you one example. Rashi, Bishnat Shalosh Lamachut Yehoiakim. Is it possible to say so? Efshar lomar ken? V'alo malach Bishnat Arba Yehoiakim. It doesn't even come to power until the fourth year of Yehoiakim. And he quotes the verses that I just shared with you. So what's the third year? So I'll share with you Rashi's answer in a moment. But just to see how creative this challenge forces us to become, there are commentaries, Ibn Ezra chief amongst them. I don't have a translation of the Ibn Ezra, so I'll just summarize what he says. He says that, you know what this third year means? What happens is, it's really not the third year, it's really the fourth year. It's like the Hebrew calendar and the English calendar are out of sync, right? We're in year 2022, but we're in year 5783. Normally the last digit lines up. But they don't line up for a couple of months because our calendars are off sync. So the third year of Yehoiakim is really the third year from the vantage point of Nebuchadnezzar is really the fourth year from the vantage point of Yehoiakim. It's really the same moment. Yerushalayim, Nebuchadnezzar's rise to power. I can manage a one-year discrepancy. But where's this exile? So the Ibn Ezra says that Nebuchadnezzar takes a detour. He comes to Yerushalayim. He takes Yehoiakim from Yerushalayim, brings him to Bavel, and forces him to swear loyalty to Nebuchadnezzar. Then he brings him back to Yerushalayim and puts him back on the throne for the remainder of his 7 years until year 11, where he puts down the rebellion, because that rebellion was in violation of the oath of loyalty he had taken to Nebuchadnezzar. Ibn Ezra, in a sense, invents, sees in these verses a new step in the process, where suddenly Nebuchadnezzar is in Yerushalayim and he takes Yehoiakim to Babel and then restores him to the throne. None of that's anywhere in Tanakh. But it's Ibn Ezra's attempt to kind of make some sense of what this third year of Yehoiakim means, that suddenly Nebuchadnezzar is taking Yehoiakim into exile. So, it's creative, it's powerful. Again, from a pshat perspective, it's hard to see that description. Rashi takes a much simpler approach. And it's simpler on the one hand, it requires of us kind of to stop and pause and think for a second what's going on. But Rashi bases himself on a medrash referred to as Seder Olam, which is a midrashic depiction of the chronology of Tanakh. And the medrash asks exactly the same question. Bishnat Shalosh Lamachut Yehoyakim, third year of Yehoyakim, Ef Shalom Akein, can this be so? Hello, Malach Bishnat Arba Yakim, he only comes to power in the fourth year. So what is the third year of Yehoyakim referring to? You probably already guessed it. Shnat Shalosh Limordo. He rebelled for 3 years. So the third year is the third year of the rebellion. So let me unpack that for a second. This is a chart which kind of outlines the years of events of Yehoyakim. Sorry, the part of it's in Hebrew, I'll explain it. Year one of Yehoyakim is the year of Yoshiah's death. Paro Necho is fighting with an earlier Nebuchadnezzar, father of our Nebuchadnezzar, known as Nebuchadnezzar. In year four, Nebuchadnezzar, his son, or Nebuchadnezzar's son, conquers Paro in the battle referred to earlier as Battle of Carchemish, and now Yehoyakim's power broker, power source, namely Egypt, is no longer part of the picture. In year five, that's that fast of Yirmiyahu, it seems that Nebuchadnezzar comes to Yerushalayim to force Yehoyakim's loyalty shift. And at that point, for 3 years, Evet Shalosh Hanim, he remains loyal to him and keeps his head down. That would take us to years 6, 7, and 8. But then, Vayashav Vayimrod Bo, he rebels against him, and according to our verse, that's the Chiddush, the verse tells us, Daniel, that rebellion lasted for 3 years. And so, that takes us to the end, to year 11 of Yehoyakim. What's the significance of telling me that the story of the exile of Yehoyakim takes place in the third year of the rebellion? Why is the rebellion even referenced or mentioned? And why is the rebellion referred to as the third year of Yehoyakim? It's the 11th year. So really, if I take this story to its logical conclusion, what I have is not two exiles to Judah. I have three. I have the exile of Jehoiakim, the exile 3 months later of Jehoiachin, and the exile of the destruction of the temple in Zedekiah's time. So why is this described as the third year of Jehoiakim? I'm going to reframe it. Let me rephrase it for a second. In the third year of the independent state of Judah, led by Yehoyakim in his rebellion against Nebuchadnezzar. In other words, for eight years, Yehoyakim has been a puppet of one power broker, or one power regime or the other. Either of Egypt, who put him on the throne, or of Babel, who conquered Egypt. In Yehoyakim's rebellion, Yehoyakim attempts to usurp some of that independence. If he can throw off Bavel, if he can manage to throw the yoke of Bavel off his neck, he regains some independence. And so that rebellion is described from Israel's vantage point as an independence, or attempt to a war of independence, or a rebellion of independence, or an attempt to create independence. It's 3 years long, and it doesn't last. And during those 3 years, we saw before, God sent all kinds of challenges to Yehoyakim, because God did not want that rebellion. The message through Yirmiyahu is that this is a time in which the power of the independence of Israel is now ended. 3 years into that attempted independence, Nebuchadnezzar finally puts down the rebellion and brings Joachim to exile. And that's how our story begins. Our story begins in Daniel. It's the story of the exiles. It's a story of we're going to follow the children. Daniel is a young boy. His friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, are young children. They're described in Pasuk Daled as Yiladim, children, who go into this exile. But we need to understand what they're going through, the trauma that they're going through. And the trauma is not just because they're being exiled in the days of Jehoiachin, 3 months later, which was a relatively quiet exile. Nebuchadnezzar shows up in Yerushalayim, takes the royal family, and the rest of it is, it's a non-violent exile. Jehoiakim's exile was at the end of a 3-year revolt, and it ended brutally. And into that experience, these children now march into Bavel and ask themselves the question, who are we? What are we? Where are our loyalties? What kind of cultural, spiritual challenges are we going to face? And are we destined to go home ever? And if so, what do we have to do to get there? And that's the backdrop of the rest of the story of Sefer Daniel, is the children's challenges, as adults, their spiritual world, and then eventually the mission, the message, and the prayers to return home. Daniel is really the precursor to the books of Ezra and Nehemiah and the return of the Babylonian exile, and the return from Persia. All of this starts Bishnat Shalosh L'machut Yoyakim, in the 3rd year of the rebellion of Yoyakim, the attempted independence that fails. Think about, for example, the Bar Kokhba revolt and everything that we place in the story of the Bar Kokhba revolt, which is the Second Temple period, which is a similar attempt by Bar Kokhba and Rabbi Akiva to kind of throw off the yoke of Rome. And when it fails, it seals the fate of the exile. Yoyakim's rebellion, very similarly, when it failed, Nebuchadnezzar marches back into Yerushalayim, only this time not with, swear loyalty to me and everybody can remain and everybody's fine. This is the end of a very intense and difficult rebellion. And that's the story of the end of Yoyakim. I will add to this one little postscript, and then just to kind of emphasize how challenging this exile of Yoyakim was, and that is the fact that we don't have, there's a mystery as to how Yoyakim dies. I shared with you the psukim in Daniel, says the 3rd year of, he was taken to exile. Vayiten Hashem b'yadot Yoyakim, and he was taken to exile, v'yavim eretz shin'ar. I shared with you the pasuk in Malachim Bet, Perek of Dalid, which says that Vayishkav Yoyakim imavotav, that Yoyakim died. So now I have, it seems he dies in Yerushalayim. I mean, it doesn't say anything about him being taken to Bavel. And then I have the pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, which I shared with you, and I'll just kind of do it as a chart, it'll be easier to see. Which describes him having been taken to Bavel in chains. So, was he taken to Bavel in chains? Was he taken to Bavel at all? Did he die in Yerushalayim? And I would add the mystery of why immediately subsequently Nebuchadnezzar places Jehoiachin on the throne, his son, and 3 months later takes him to Bavel. What's that all about? So for this, very briefly, we need to know that Yirmiyahu has some of the harshest prophecies of his entire Sefer directed against Jehoiakim. And he says of Jehoiakim that he will die a death not of royalty, not of a king, not of who will be eulogized by the people, hoy achi, hoy achot, we just experience on a global scale what the funeral for a royalty who is beloved by their people means. We saw it in the Queen's funeral service of Queen Elizabeth II. It's as far from that as you can imagine, the other end of the spectrum, says Yirmiyahu about Yehoyakim. Lo yispedula. They won't even eulogize him. They won't say, "Woe, my brother." They won't say, "Hoy Adon, woe, Master, His Majesty." Kfurat chamo yikaver. He will be buried like a burial of an ass. Sachov ashlech me'ala l'shavei Yerushalayim. You'll be dragged out and left outside, lying outside the gates of Yerushalayim. So Rashi says that that's the secret to the story. Nebuchadnezzar comes to Yerushalayim after the rebellion of 3 years with the intent to take Yehoyakim in chains to Bavel, le'alicho Bavela, to take him to Bavel. But he doesn't get there because he falls off the chariot and he gets trampled upon and he dies, me'ala l'sharei Yerushalayim. And so in response, Nebuchadnezzar is left without his trophy. Nebuchadnezzar is left. Are we still there? Did I lose you?
You're here.
Yeah, it's clear. Okay. I'm gonna take off the... I thought I froze there for a second. Nebuchadnezzar is left without his trophy. Without his king in jail in his palace that he can point to and say, "I conquered Israel." So he goes back, he appoints Nechoniah, he appoints the successor, only to take him off the throne 3 months later and bring him to Yerushalayim. Yechoniah, Yehoyachin, will stay in jail in Bavel for 37 years. That's his trophy. Because Yehoyakim's death was a tragic end to this very intense period of time when the last attempt to rebuild Jewish independence that failed. It did not have the sanction of the Nevi'im. The Nevi'im had declared that this time was not the time of Jewish independence, and the kings refused to listen. Against all of that backdrop, the story of Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah walk into Babylon, into this foreign world that is a warring army power, and ask themselves the question, how do we stay Jewish? How do we assert our faith in God despite one of the darkest periods in our biblical history? And that's the question that they will struggle with. That's the beginning of Sefer Daniel. The question, the historical background, and the question that they are asking themselves, these young children, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, his friends, we will introduce them to you all next week, asking themselves the question, dealing with challenges of, what food do you eat? You're in the palace of the king. You're slaves, you're servants of a foreign power. It's not kosher food. What do you eat? What happens when they put an idol in front of you? What happens when you're forced to swear loyalty to the gods of Bavo? What do you do? And it's not like Babel is a peaceful nation that can be negotiated with. We know what Babel can be. We know what Babel can do. We've seen it. And that's the opening two sentences. Here's the background. The darkest, bloodiest rebellion in Tanakh ends with Yehoyakim's death, literally outside of Yerushalayim, trampled on by the chariots. The Jews go into exile. The Kalim, the vessels of the temple, go into exile. Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, these children are part of that group. And the story of Jewish life will be revived through the faith and loyalty of these four children, who we will get a understanding of and see and introduce ourselves to, Bezrat Hashem, next week. And with that, I will open the floor. If you have 5 minutes for questions, I have time. Otherwise, we will adjourn and meet again next week.
Is it possible that King Yehoyakim committed suicide, threw himself off that thing to be trampled?
It is entirely possible. We don't know. We do not know. All it says is that he will be, and again, that the connection between these two points is in Rashi, so we don't know what, you know, because the text leaves us with this ambiguity. So, yeah, but it's possible. Okay, any other questions? All right, then I will adjourn here, and we will see you, B'ezrat Hashem, all next week.
Thank you. Excellent class.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Fantastic.